We want to greet you in Jesus' name this morning. Thankful again to be in the house of God. I appreciate that last song also. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. How many of us feel that way this morning? I trust all of us. Makes me think of children when they have something that was given to them that's very important to them. They say, this is mine. Now that's a selfish reason, I realize that. But do we have a similar feeling about Jesus? Jesus is mine, and I am his. He's blessed with that. And also in the chorus there, praising him all the day long. Do we do that? Do we think about that? I think if we would praise Jesus all day long, it probably would keep us from a lot of things. It would help us not to yield temptation. It would keep us from sin. How can you sin when you're praising God? A challenge for each one of us. Today I've chosen to speak out of John chapter 5. We have in there a a healing, and also at the last part, I think Jesus actually preached a message there to the Jews, to the Sanhedrin that were challenging him why he was doing things on the Sabbath day. Also makes me think of Acts chapter 1, verse 1. Says, the former treatise I have I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began both to do and teach. I think what Jesus taught explained what he did. And what he did confirmed what he taught. It was interwoven in each other there. But even then, the Jews seemed to find fault with whatever he said or did. We can see that in this chapter. It just seemed like they were having issues. He just couldn't seem to do anything right for them, for a lot of them. There were some believing Jews. All right, chapter 5 in John. Maybe we'll read the first 16 verses here. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there was in Jerusalem, by the sheep market, a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down to a certain seat at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in, was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, he knew that he had been now a long time in that case. He said unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed, and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed, and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole, sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed, and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. Okay, let's go back and go over some of this. The time that Jesus went to Jerusalem, it was a feast of the Jews. Jesus was a Jew, and therefore the ordinance that God had given, there was a need for him to go to this feast, to the Passover feast. And so Jesus went as a Jew to this feast. I think sometimes, maybe we can get something out of this, that we need to attend services, the assembly of God's people. Sometimes I think we don't put enough of importance on that. Now, Jesus was a Son of God, so he possibly could have said, well, I am the Son of God, I think I can miss this time. But I don't think that ever entered Jesus' mind. I think he wanted to be there. Also in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25, he says, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as ye see the day approaching. It's very important for us to assemble together with God's people. Whenever there is something going, I think we should have something within us that would motivate us to try to be there, because we have the love of the brotherhood. We love to fellowship together. We get encouragement when we're together. So I think we should see the importance of being there, if at all possible. We know that sometimes things arise that keep us from being there. We understand that. But sometimes I think maybe a little bit of a sickness sometimes keeps us from being there that would really not keep us away from there if we really had the desire that we want to be there. Also, I think Jesus saw a great opportunity to minister to the people. There were a lot of people there. I think they were serious-minded people because they were observing the law. They were there to serve God and to worship and to do the things that they were supposed to do back then. And I think they wanted to further their love and devotion for God. I think that's what they were there for. And also, Jesus was willing to seize the opportunity. In Proverbs 1, verses 20 to 23, it talks about wisdom. Wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of the concourse, in the opening of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity, and the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge? How many times do we spurn an opportunity to speak out for Christ? When the opportunity presents itself, do we seize that and do we put in a word for God? Just recently at our reunion, we were talking with some of the people there, and we got to talking about why is it so easy to talk about a product that we use, or a restaurant that we go to, food that we eat. We hear that quite frequently. You have got to try this. This is really some good stuff, whatever it is. We freely talk about that. How often do we talk about our salvation experience? That is much more important. But for some reason, a lot of us find it a little more difficult to talk about spiritual things. But that is more important in our lives than anything else. It's a challenge to me. How much do I seize the opportunity to bring encouragement one to another, to say something good, to do something for someone else? All right, verse 2. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market, a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda. And Bethesda actually means a house of mercy, because that's where God showed his mercy to the sick and to the diseased. Also at this gate, I think this is probably the gate that Eliashib, the high priest, that we read about in Nehemiah 3, he talks about there. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren and the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. They sanctified it and set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Mia, and they sanctified it unto the tower of Hananiel. I think this was probably that gate and that area that this pool was. Incidentally, there is down in the St. Mary's Episcopal Cathedral in Memphis, there is actually a stone there that comes from some of the columns that were around the balustrade around those porches at that pool. It's sort of interesting. Maybe someday I can go out there and see that, but I haven't seen it yet. But it's a stone that Bishop Thomas F. Gaylor brought over back in June 1st of 1928, a long time ago that he brought that over. But anyhow, so that's an interesting piece of history there. In verse 3, there were a great multitude of impotent folk. I think it does us good a lot of times to go into hospitals and to visit people and to see what all is out there and realize that we have been blessed mightily from the different things and diseases that could come around, the different situations. Just thank God for how he has blessed us with health. Well, sure, we have some issues at times, but God has definitely blessed us, and we need to thank him for that. And makes us think, of course, of Brother Simon not being here, and now, of course, we heard of David there. Also, you know, let's remember people like that, that have got issues, and we know that Simon is longing to go where there is no more sickness. We know that. But still, it makes it difficult on us to see someone suffer and not be able to communicate and things like that. So let's definitely remember his family in our prayers. Also, these people there, the blind, the halt, and the withered, were waiting for the moving of the water. I think we go to great lengths sometimes to fix our health problems. Some of us go out of the country. I mean, Mexico, Germany, whatever. We go to great lengths to try to fix our problems. To what lengths do we go, and how strong is our desire to find out whether we have any spiritual sicknesses that we can have fixed through Jesus Christ? How strong is our desire for that? That is a challenge that I get out of this. There were also people there that were not able to get themselves down into the water there. Some of them had been there for a long time, as we'll see here in a little bit. But they came from a long distance also. Some of them, I think they were also from different parts of the country, and they had heard about this pool, so they came over there, and they probably didn't know when they'd be coming back. And they didn't know how often the angel would stir the water either. The cure for these impotent folk was an angel. In verse 4, an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Now there again, angels are servants of God. And they're probably more active in removing diseases than what we realize, as far as that goes. But they are always willing to do the will of God, even going down and just stirring the water, which probably was not very difficult at all. Now the question for us is, how willing are we to do the will of God? The angels, that's what they do. We have a choice whether we want to follow the will of God or not. I think we should always be willing to do whatever God asks us. The troubling of the water was a signal that the healing was in the water, and they needed to bestir themselves. They needed to move from where they were toward the healing waters. We don't know how often it happened, if it was just every now and then, if it was several times a month or a week or a couple times a year. We don't know how often that was. But whenever the water was stirred, they wanted to get there as quickly as possible so that they could get healed. And the ones that got there were healed. And the ones that lingered or weren't able to get there that quick were not healed. The angel stirred the waters, but the disease had to get into the water. In the same way, God has given us his word because he wants us to be healed. If we do not apply them to our own lives, it is our own fault, and we will not be healed. We already have the waters right here for our spiritual lives. It talks about in verse 5, this man that was there 38 years. I don't know that he was at the pool for 38 years, but he had this sickness this infirmity for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there, I think Jesus was filled with compassion. He already knew how long this man was laying there. And we also know that when Jesus came to Jerusalem, he didn't go to the palaces there. He didn't go to the high places. He went to the hospital, if you will, to where the sick were. I believe that shows his humility and compassion, and also the reason that he came to this earth, to seek and to save. That's why Jesus came here, is to seek and to save. There were a great multitude of crippled there, but Jesus looked upon this one because possibly he was there the longest, or he was possibly in the worst condition. We don't know. But for some reason, Jesus knew that this man wanted some healing. There can be also a consolation for us, because Jesus knows all about us. He knows, even in our physical sicknesses, God knows all about it. And he is there to help us through. Whether he heals us or not, he is still there to help us through whatever the situation might be. Jesus knows all about us. And he asked this man, "Wilt thou be made whole? Do you want to be healed?" And that might sound a little strange. Why would you ask a lame man something like that? Of course he wants to be healed. I mean, who wouldn't? But I believe that there are some people that don't want to be healed because I was reading in Matthew Henry commentary, and he says in there, because their sores serve them to beg by and serve them for an excuse for idleness. I trust there's no one here like that. That builds on having an illness or whatever because they're lazy. I don't think we have anything like that here. But Jesus had pity and concern for this man, and he wanted him to express his desire to be healed. I think there's other places where Jesus talks about that, or where he asks people the question. Now, again, bringing it to our spiritual lives, and trying to bring this physical and also turning it into our spiritual lives here. Do we really want to be cured of our sins? We talked about in the Sunday school class about the liberty that we have. And that liberty is that we are freed from that ceremonial law that they had, and also from the curse of sin. That's what we are freed from. So, how willing are, or how badly do we want to be cured of our sin, or are we enjoying them too much to let go? It's a question that we need to ask ourselves. If people are willing to be made whole, the work is half done. That's already half of the battle if people want to be healed, especially spiritually, because Christ is willing to heal if we are willing to be healed. That is where the question comes in. Going to Matthew chapter 8, verse 2 and 3. There came a leper, and behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. The leper knew that Jesus was able to do this, and he just said that if thou wilt, if you want to, you can heal me. And Jesus expressed his willingness to see him healed. He said, I will. I want you to be whole. Going on to verse 7, the impotent man answered, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Seems like everyone was for himself here. And then when they were healed, they left. They were there long enough, so they got out of there. I don't know how it was. Seemed like to me, or some of us are like to talk more with the people around us. Seems like I would, if I would have been there, I would have probably tried to talk to some people there around me and made some friends, and maybe if I would have been able to get into the pool, I'm just sort of imagining, and I would have gotten healed, I would have sort of felt a responsibility to be there to help my friends get in there to so they could get healed. But I don't know how often the water was troubled. I'm not sure how often that happened. But it seems like everyone was for himself. And when he was about to get into the water, somebody else got there just before he did. And this happened, seems like it happened over and over again. But there again, how thankful are we for the least amount of kindness that someone shows to us? Jesus even said that someone that gives a child a cold cup of water will have his reward. It's a blessing. And also being there for a long time, he was faithful. He kept his faith. He knew that if he could just get there, he could be healed. So he was faithful in being there. Then in verse 8, Jesus said, Rise, take up thy bed and walk. I think it was a perfect cure. He was probably better than he had ever been before, as far as that goes. I'm not sure how old he was, but he had this sickness for that long. And so take up thy bed and walk. Instead of just getting up and walking off, I think it was an example of taking up his bed and walking off with the bed, because possibly he didn't have use of his hands and his legs or whatever. I'm not sure. So to show that he had the perfect cure, he rose, took up his bed, and walked. And there again, a sinner must come to Christ. We need to rise and walk, turn around and walk away with a new heart when we have experienced salvation. Then verse 10 and 11, we come back to the Jews. Therefore said they unto him that was cured, it is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. They right away went into the law. But he answered, and he that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk. I just imagine that the man felt like if someone had the power to heal, then he probably would not ask him to do something that was wrong. He would surely wouldn't do that. And then they asked him, what man is this which said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Jesus just sort of went away right there, and I think this man possibly knew of Jesus, maybe. He had heard about the things that Jesus was doing, but he probably never seen him, so he had no idea who he was. Jesus even loves to do things for people that don't know him. Isaiah 45, 4 and 5, he says, for Jacob, my servant's sake, the Israel, mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. I am the Lord, there is none else. There is no God beside me. I gird thee, though thou hast not known me. Even though people don't know God, Christ is still there to help. Also in John, I thought I would read John chapter 9, the first 38 verses, but we're sort of running out of time there. He's talking about the man that was born blind, and Jesus healed him, still thinking of doing something for someone that didn't know who he was. And the Jews there again came unto him. Jesus had made a clay and put it on his eyes and healed him. And told him to go wash, and his sight returned. And the Pharisees were asking questions and trying to figure out. He had actually told them that it was Jesus that did this. Can't lay my eyes on it right now. But anyhow, he had told them that it was Jesus that had healed him. I think they were trying to get something against Jesus again. But then all the way down to, starting in verse 35, Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when they found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? And he answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? He didn't know who he was either. And Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. I think that was even though he didn't know who he was, he still wanted to believe in him. Also in Galatians chapter 4, verse 9, but now after that ye have known God, or rather known of God, turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? Talking again about that liberty. But why would we want to go back into something after we have known God, or rather are known of God? Which that Brother Lester made a comment today in class, and I can't remember exactly what it was now. Something about the peace of God. That he gives us his peace. Could you repeat that for me?
Yes, we all want, it's one thing to have the peace of God, but it's something much more.
There you go. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, to have the God of peace, that is more important than having the peace of God. To having God within. Whether we have... Well, we'll just leave that. Okay, going on down in verse 14. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. Why did he put that behind there? Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. It seems like that possibly he had this infirmity because of sin, something that he had done earlier. And so Jesus told him to not commit sin again. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. It seems like this sickness might have been because of some sin that he had committed. So Jesus is telling him not to repeat that sin, lest something worse come to him. And having felt the payment for sin for 38 years, I would imagine he would not want to repeat that again. And also being healed dramatically like that, I think it was very much made an impression on him. Okay, just going to have to skip down through here a little bit. Maybe I'll just go ahead and read the rest of this. The Jews in verse 18, the Jews sought the more to kill him because he had not only broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making him equal with God. Because of the things that he had done on the Sabbath day, it seems like this was just the last straw for them, and therefore they decided they had to wipe him out, to get him, to kill him. But they were so concentrating on the law, on that portion of the law, that they forgot about the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. So they were not coming across quite correctly there. So, okay, going on in verse 19. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that he himself doeth, and he will show him greater works than these, than that ye may marvel. For as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son, that all men should honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. He that honoreth not the Son honoreth not the Father which hath sent him. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself. He hath given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in the which all that are in the graves shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. I can of my own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that beareth witness of me, and I know that the witness which he witnesseth of me is true. He sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth. But I receive not testimony from man, but these things I say, that ye might be saved. He was a burning and a shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in his light. But I have greater witness than that of John, for the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works that I do bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself, which hath sent me, hath borne witness of me, Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape. And ye have not his word abiding in you, for whom he hath sent, him ye believe not. Search the scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. And ye would not come to me that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe which receive honor of one another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For he that believeth Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words? There was quite a sermon that he preached right there and really stepped on their toes. And I think we can get a lesson out of that too, that we need to be not just trying to live a godly life, but we need to allow God to direct us so that we live a godly life. And they were also very concerned that about the old law and stuff. And I think we can be careful on that ourselves, especially having the lesson that we had today about being in that liberty, that Christian liberty that we have. I'm not sure that we truly understand that liberty that Christ has made us free, and so that we are just free to serve God. We are free to do whatever the Spirit asks us to do and directs us. Let's not be like the Jews that are accusing of, they were saying that they are Moses' servants and his disciples, but at the same time, Jesus told them that if they were Moses' disciples, then they would know of Jesus himself. They were sort of one-tracked. And I think we can get that way ourselves sometimes. We can get sort of one-tracked and get off the track. Let us strive to be on the track and follow God's word, study it more and more. It's a challenge for myself and each one. Let us kneel for a word of prayer.